I'm Katie G. I'm a recovered compulsive eater. And
hi, Katie.
Hi, Katie.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Katie.
Hey, everyone. Welcome.
Hi, Katie.
I don't say recovered to be falsely humble. I say it because it's true. I say it because on the first page of our big book, it tells me that this is the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism, or in my case, food addiction. And I didn't know that recovered didn't mean cured. I thought recovered meant like, okay, I've paid my dues. I've been 228 pounds. I've been 110 pounds. I've dealt with, you know, trauma growing up. I've dealt with this, that, and the other thing. So therefore, now that I'm in program, I'm going to run through the steps, get to the other side, and live a perfect life, and nothing bad is ever going to happen to me. And it's not true. I have an illness. It's chronic, which means it's never getting better. Even if I'm in recovery, it's progressive, getting worse all the time. And it is fatal. A lot of people who don't experience anorexia and bulimia have said to me that they don't feel like it's as fatal. But I know, having been 228 pounds and 110 pounds, like, this disease will kill me. It wants me dead. It will settle for me eating. And I didn't know what the disease of food addiction was when I came into the room. So I thought that if I could just get to be in a thin body and stop and like eat whatever I wanted, I would be okay. Like, that was the first delusion I ever told myself. And I had this gaping wound. Like, ever since I was a little girl, I can just feel this gaping wound in my solar plexus that I tried to fill with food. And then immediately, as a woman, and so I'm sure for men too, but it's different. I don't have your experience. I immediately got into dieting, like, really, really young. And I share that because it's really important that as a woman in recovery today, I don't follow a diet. It's very important for me to understand my plan of eating is different than my abstinence. My abstinence is the foods, ingredients, and for me, behaviors that I've used to try and control my body weight because I couldn't deal with that gaping hole. Like, I just remember being a little girl feeling like I should be someone else doing something else with other people at some other time. Like, I just didn't fit in. And what I didn't understand is that is the disease of alcoholism. And when I say alcoholism, I mean food addiction. And so for me, I turned to food at an early age, and it actually was a really good skill. Like, if you think about it, it's pretty creative. Like, lots of stuff is going on in your house, and maybe there wasn't. Like, I want to be careful. A lot of times people come on the line and they talk about how trauma is part of their history, or violence is part of their history. If that's not part of your history, you still get a seat in Overeaters Anonymous, because there's only two qualifications that you have to be a part of our meet, not even part of our meeting, to use the step, not even to use the steps. You can do it whether you're a real eater or not, but to be a real compulsive overeater, it means two things, right? I have an allergy of the body. So for me, that means that when I put certain foods, ingredients, and behaviors into my body, I have an abnormal adverse reaction. What does that mean? It means that when I start over exercising, if it's not weighed and measured, I want more. I'm like, well, I did an hour, I got to do 2 hours. Like, when I was recovering from my first baby, I went from walking 3 miles to 8 miles in a week. Postnatal, which is crazy. Like, I have a kind of crazy driving to put stuff into here. So food worked for me for a really long time. But the problem is, when you're a food addict, there are lots of repercussions, right? So first of all, your body. So I was sexually harassed, da, 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 da. I believe this delusion. If I could just get thin enough, I would be okay. I started dieting, and that became my obsession, as opposed to dealing with this spiritual malady. The second part of my illness is an obsession of the mind. And for a long time, I thought, okay, an obsession of the mind is going to be about food. No, because if you think about it, I don't even really like food. Like if you're sitting here, I never looked for the ease and comfort that comes at once by taking that first bite. Did you? I looked for the sense of ease and comfort. Because if I really liked Hershey's bars, why would I shove so many in my mouth at one time and not chew and then throw up? Like if I really loved, I don't know, tortilla chips, why would I shove them in my mouth like that? Like I don't want that food. I want that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by taking that first bite, bites that I see others taking without consequence. Right. I remember thinking my neighbor, if I could just chew like her, maybe I could manage my food. Like if I could just, and then like, if I could just have a thing, like, cause I have had this gaping hole. Right. And I had no idea who I wanted to be. So I was like, well, maybe if I'm a gymnast, right. Like maybe if I'm a soccer player, maybe like I just wanted my thing. I didn't fit in school. And a lot of it was because I have this constant ticker tape parade in my head. Like, I don't know if you know this, if you're newly abstinent, my encouragement is not to sit in meditation for a long time. Stop. Because when you're newly abstinent, your brain, if it's like mine, is going to be cuckoo Cocoa Puffs. Like on a good day, on a good spiritual hair day, my brain is about detaching Katie from my thinking, right? Because I live in that self-centered fear. Like somebody, like, let's say Maria gives me a weird look and I'm like, well, what's wrong with Maria? What did I do to Maria? Sorry, Maria, right? Like it must be about me. It's all self-centered fear. So I was a little girl who I fought like hell to live, right? Because I thought everything needed to be a fight. And it was. I thought I should just pull myself up by my bootstraps. So by the time I was 17, I went on my first diet. I ended up anorexic. I got into a relationship. I started using women and men, shoving them into my body, throwing up all over them. Like whatever you had, like when people say my drug of choice, I'm like, what? My drug of no choice. Like I don't choose. Like once I put that into my body, it sets up an uncontrollable craving for more. And the way it gets triggered is I have an obsession of the mind. So the obsession of the mind, let's say again, Maria, I'm going to pick on you. It's Maria, right? Because Maria looked at me and she didn't. She's got a beautiful face and nice glasses. So Maria looked at me, right? So she looked at me funny. And I'm like, why did Maria look at me? Why'd Maria look at me? Well, maybe Patricia doesn't like me either because I think that Maria and Patricia are friends. If Maria and Patricia aren't. So do you recognize that chatter? Like that's the chatter. And what happens is all of a sudden this thought, food is going to fix it. The scale is going to fix it. The diet's going to fix it occurs to me, but I'm not connected to God because I haven't done the step work and I've not had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And so I don't have a second thought. I don't have a second thought, which I have now, which is like, Katie, you're cuckoo. Maria loves you. You're amazing. I'm just kidding. But the food's not going to fix it. And you know that. And that's crazy thinking. So that's the difference between me before. I wouldn't have that thought. And I need to say to you, if you're a newcomer or you're a relapser and you don't want to talk about God, that's fine. Alcoholism and food addiction is going to scare you back into the room. So where are you going to talk about the God? I'm not here to apologize for God. I'm not here to apologize that I have a relationship with God, that God has saved me. I'm not here to shove down a religion. I'm not here to tell you what my God is, but I'm here to demonstrate, like, I've been 228 pounds and 110 pounds. I've known the devastation of feeling all alone and like only food can fix it. I've known the fear around social anxiety. I know that I seem like a really talkative person, but I'm scared of all of you. And the way my fear exhibits itself is I'm not quiet. So OA is working on me a day at a time. So I spent 27 years of my life fighting this disease. and fighting this disease, not only in my body, because I would put that food in my mouth, like the time and place would come that I would put the food in my mouth. It sets up an uncontrollable craving for more. And I did that with dieting too. And one of the things I want to say to you is if you're in this room and you're treating your food plan like a diet, let me explain what that looked like for me. Because I've been in the rooms for 16 years and I've been out of exercise bulimia, the break I had 5.5 years ago. So not that long. I was in relapse for probably like 3 months. But where was I going with this? So I have no idea. Hang on, I'll come back. Sometimes my mommy brain gets really... So I had an adverse abnormal reaction to life, self-centered fear. I never believed that, well, I knew I was insane. I knew, but I always thought it was my parents' fault. So step two came to believe that a power, oh, well, let me just take a step back. So step one, we admitted we were powerless over food. That doesn't just mean that like I'm going to stay on this diet and I can use diet and sugar-free products. If that works for you, that's fine. But if you think of a cocaine addict, if I told you I was allergic to cocaine and yet I was drinking diet cocaine, you would tell me I was insane, right? So we have to get, I had to get out of the diet mentality. Second part is step one, my life is unmanageable. Those two are not connected. And it's really important that I remember that because when I'm in the food, when I'm in the exercise bulimia, when I'm in the anorexia, life is unmanageable. I can't pay my bills. I do overspend. I'm not really nice, right? But my life is never going to be manageable. I don't manage my life today, right? I have that relationship with God that only comes through the result of working the steps. And I have to tell you, I don't do the steps once and then be done. I do the steps every year. And I do live in 10, 11 and pass it along in 12. And that's a lot of work. But as my title said, God does not make too harsh terms with those who honestly seek him. Like I've been in the rooms for 16 years. I've always worked a very disciplined program. Thank you, God. But what it means that God does not make too harsh terms is that if you have your seat here, this can happen for you too. Like I always want to count myself out. Like I'm an anorexic or I'm a bulimic or I'm this, or I'm unique or you don't understand me. Like that's alcoholism. Like I'm too special. And the thing is the most insane thing I ever did. So step two tells me I'm insane. Like, right. I can give you a lot of foodalog stories that are really funny, but I'm sure you have the same ones and I don't really think you need to hear me tell them. The most insane thing I ever did is knowing that the food and the bulimia and the anorexia was going to kill me and ignoring it and being defiant about it and being like, well, I can manage it this time. Here's how. And that's what unifies us, not the 228 pounds, not the 110 pounds. Those are all the side effects. The insanity is all of us, if you're sitting here, I think maybe, have this idea that like, okay, now that I'm in a state of abstinence only, I can do it again. I'm powerful. And I have no power, no choice, and no control around the food. So I'm going to continue to, God is kind of suggesting I go through the steps. So step three, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Now here's the thing. I can't turn my will and my life over to the care of God in step three. Why? Because when I came into the rooms, you might know what your will in your life is, but I don't. I burned my life to the ground. I went to college. I put on 110 pounds in college, eating and drinking. I barely graduated. I got a job in insurance, which if you work in insurance, God love you. It's not for me. It was very hard. And I was absolutely miserable. So I didn't know what my will in my life was, and I had to learn what my will in my life was by doing the steps. And I still do. Like, I don't, like, I know who God's will is for me not to be, but I don't know who it is that he wants me to be all the time. And, I do crazy things because again, I have a sick mind, but today the difference is being a recovered woman. I'm surrounded by other recovered women and, mentors that I have that point out, hey, Katie, I care more about you than I do your feelings, and you're really off base. You need to make an amend to your husband. And why is my behavior connected to my eating? Because if I continue to, let's say I was having an affair, if I continue to have an affair or cheat or lie or manipulate, that obsessional thinking starts going, right? Thinking, blocking God out, and I pick up eating as a step up from how I feel. So, but the thing is, the fine line in the 12 steps is, you know, we get really passionate in Vision for You meeting we have here about how certain lines mean certain things, and you have to take an hour in step 5 with God, and if you don't, But it's not really true. Like, my experience is, I have 2 kids. I went through IVF treatment. I lost babies. Like, there are times that I can't take quiet time every single morning. I just can't, but I seek God. And how do I seek God? In your faces, in my child's face, in my dog's face, hopefully in my husband's face, like, you know, and he's there. Like, all I have to do, like, if you're struggling with your concept of God, stop. God's not struggling with his concept of you. Like, just do the steps. And the whole point of the steps is to give you a relationship with God. So anyway, step 3, step 4, I make the searching and fearless moral inventory in order to figure out what my will and my life are. And I'll tell you currently, so you might know me from the Vision for You meeting. I have another meeting that I attend. I'm currently on step 4, and I'm looking at my relationships, specifically with my husband and other irritants that I have. I can get really caught off guard when things don't go my way. Like, and I'm living on page 60 to 63, which is Katie's forever trying to arrange the lights, the scenery, and the ballet, right? So I'm working on that right now. I'm in step 4, and there are 3 parts to step 4. It's resentment, fear, and sex conduct relationships. So resentment is like the top tier of my feelings. It's really easy for me to be angry. What's hard for me to be is fearful. And a lot of times I hear people, it's like really sexy to be fearful and not sexy to be angry. So they're like, well, I'm afraid, but I can't do that. I have to look at what the anger is, and then I can discover the fear. Right. So if I have a fear that I'm not good enough, and I'm living my life as a fear of not good enough, then every time Mia looks at me today, right, and she's not, I'm just using her example, her name. Every time she looks at me, I'm going to be like, well, why is Mia wearing that hat? She knows I like that hat. She should be giving me that hat. Right. So that's like, so fear is like this tainted glass. And then I'm resenting Mia, and I'm doing a step 10 on her because she's got this hat that I want, and she won't give it to me. So I'm using light examples, but these are the kinds of things that dominate my thinking when I'm not in fit spiritual condition. So the second part of the step 4 is fear. I saw that I'd never made a decision that wasn't completely based on fear. Professions, men, women, relationships, everything was fearful for me. And the book talks about 100 forms of fear. And I'll tell you what, the difference between every single diet and 12 step is this book. Like, my book is very loved because this is the life manual that I have for everything. There is an answer for everything. So, and then finally, the third part of resentment that we've been talking about in our meeting is our sexual conduct, our relationship conduct. And that has gone beyond just who am I in my marriage? It's who am I relating to men? Who am I relating to my mother-in-law, who, if you know me, is a frequent flyer on my 10-step work? Who am I as a mom? And there are great prayers throughout the book to help me with that. Step 6 and 7, I'm going to kind of gloss over only because step 6 and 7 for me is the culmination of all my work. I always come back to step 6 and 7. Because step 6 is my character defects and then humbly asking him to remove them. And I'm telling you, God has not removed all my character defects. You want to talk to my hubs? I still have a lot of character defects. And some of them he's using me with. Like, he uses my controlling. I have 2 little girls. It's actually pretty helpful to be a controller and, you know, have a schedule. So, you know, but when it gets to the point that I'm asking my husband what he's doing when he's in the bathroom after a half an hour, Probably a problem. So step 6 and 7, I revisit all the time. Steps 8 and 9. So step 8, I made a list of the people I have harmed. And then I actually make the amends. Now, I've made hundreds and hundreds of amends. And I don't say that because I'm a good person. I say that because I'm sick. Think about that. I've had a lot of amends to make. So if you're stuck on amends, give me a call. The promise of making the amends is, number one, we're going to stay abstinent. If you're sitting on amends right now and you're wondering why you're not abstinent, well, first of all, let's look at your food plan. Second of all, book promises me in a couple places that I'm going to eat again. Sex, if I'm not sorry and my conduct continues, and not completing all my amends. Do not sit on amends. They're hard to do, but the promise in step 5 is I can be alone and at perfect peace and ease. I can look the world in the eye. What? To me, that comes with the ability to say to my husband, I was wrong. I was wrong, and not make an excuse. Or a couple of days ago when I got mad at Gabby, saying, mommy made a mistake. Mommy, because my parents never said that to me. I never had the humility to say that. It was pretty powerful. And just moving on, step 10 and 11, really, I did a talk recently on it. And those are really the foundations, the culmination of my whole life, or my whole program of recovery, where, I mean, I work a really disciplined program. I have a food plan. I know what my abstinence is. And every single day, 365, my disease does not take a break. I talk to my sponsor. I talk to sponsees. I'm on my knees in the morning and at night. And again, I'm not saying this because I'm a good person, but because it takes a lot to manage the mental aspect of this disease. And I'm seeking God throughout the day. You guys know I try and participate in our meetings. And step 11, remember, is not just meditation and prayer. Again, if you're new, I wouldn't suggest doing a lot of meditation right now. I would spend some more time on your step work so you don't go crazy in meditation. But step 11 starts with inventory, because Bill W. said that the basis of our, he says it beautifully in the AA 12 and 12, something about how the basis of inventory and then prayer and then meditation is some like really great thing, is basically what he says in his, I'm paraphrasing it terribly, but that those three things when taken together is the culmination of like my tools for life today, that I inventory, right? And then I'm like, oh, well, I was a jerk. God, how do I fix that? Right? And then I get up in the morning and I say, God, I was a jerk yesterday. These were the things that were going on. How can I do it differently today? So I have 1 minute and 58 seconds left. I don't know what else to say. Like, I have been given the opportunity, the privilege of living multiple lives in one lifetime. I'm not any better than you. I'm not any worse than you. I woke up with bad breath just like you. I have to brush my teeth. Like, I don't have your answers. But what I know is that today, God willing, I don't suffer. I have compulsive eating, but I don't suffer from compulsive eating. I have a purposeful life. I've suffered a lot in life because, let's be honest, bad things are gonna happen to all of us. They just are. That's just life. None of us are getting out alive. But with this program of recovery, I don't have to be the bad thing that's happening in somebody's life today, right? Like, I get to be married. I get to have children. These are things that I wanted desperately for my life that didn't come right away. I get to know all of you. I get to have relationships with my family and then my family of origin, because I don't go where the love is not anymore. I'm learning to have relationships. Thank God today I'm teachable. I'm not fighting. But it's really important. Like, if you have your seat here, hang on to it, because God is there for you. And I didn't come in wanting a relationship with God. I wanted my body weight to start looking like an EKG, stop looking like an EKG. And it doesn't today. I've been through 2 abstinent pregnancies. My body weight is normal, but it's not even about the food. You know, it's about that I could go to a farm yesterday and be with my dad and my children and my husband, and they enjoyed ice cream and I enjoyed watching the cows and all of them and getting ice cream literally all over my face and arms, not because I was eating it, but because my 10-month-old was eating it. So I'm just really grateful to be here with all of you. I can't believe I spoke at you for 25 minutes and I look forward to hearing what your questions are. Thanks.